content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we'll dig deeper into the theme of the October issue of Our State Magazine, which is Mountain Masterpieces. The first article is entitled Blue Ribbon. The Blue Ridge Parkway stands out among America's national parks. Unfurling across six Appalachian mountain chains, it connects dozens of rural communities and binds together generations of families through shared memories. One of the most iconic views along the Blue Ridge Parkway features the Lynn Cove Viaduct, a 1,234-foot bridge that curves around Grandfather Mountain to protect its fragile habitat. We actually have a picture here of the viaduct, and which is festooned with trees in fall splendor. Mostly what I'm seeing are golden colors. I see some green, a little bit of red, but mostly golds and yellows. And then, of course, the mountains in the background, the backdrop, with the smoky blue haze that they're known for. Before she spoke her first word or took her first step, Tracy Swartout traveled the beloved road that would one day be entrusted to her care. "Even before I was born, my dad hauled my mom up and down the parkway," she says with a laugh. Though she grew up in Columbia, South Carolina, Swartout's North Carolina roots run deep. As a young adult, she spent time attending Montreat College. She was married in Henderson County. She did postgraduate work at Duke University. But the time she spent on the parkway as a teenager forged her most enduring connection to the Tar Heel State as she escaped the heat of Columbia to pick apples and pumpkins in the mountains. "The parkway was the way to get there," she recalls. "All of us in the Galaxy 500 just kind of kicking it." Many Park Service employees take assignments far from where they grew up. Swartout is no different, having served at national parks in Utah and Washington State, among others. But a fortunate few are able to return to care for places they've loved for a lifetime. In the spring of 2021, Swartout was named the first female superintendent of the Blue Ridge Parkway. Her elevation to the post was a homecoming. "All of those trips are woven into my life," she says. "Even now, I'll pull into an overlook that I've never registered the name of, and I'll get there and think, this feels familiar. Oh, wait, I sat under that tree as a kid." A sense of belonging that she's experienced threads its way through every mile of the parkway and through every memory of the millions of people who visit it each year. That's because in reality, the parkway belongs to all. It belongs to the Larkspur and the Jack of the Pulpit, the Bee Balm and the Trillium. It belongs to the Black Bear, the Wild Turkey, the Peregrine Falcon. It belongs to the Cherokee who first called these mountains Shaconage, Land of the Blue Smoke. It belongs to the Alpenhorn player who serenades visitors at the Buck Spring Gap Overlook, and to the yawning cyclists who begin their morning rides in the darkness to catch spectacular sunrises at Sleepy Gap. It belongs to the day hikers on the Mountain to Sea Trail that hugs the parkway like an old friend for about 300 miles, and to the vacationing Floridians who regard the cool alpine air at Mount Mitchell as something akin to a miracle. When Tracy Swartout was named superintendent of the Blue Ridge Parkway in 2021, she became the first woman to oversee the 469-mile road, the most visited site in the national park system. The Scenic, as the parkway was originally referred to by locals in the 1930s, grew out of a Depression-era initiative to link Shenandoah National Park with Great Smoky Mountains National Park. The 469-mile roadway represented a massive undertaking requiring cooperation among local, state, and federal governments and myriad stakeholders of sometimes competing interests, tourism leaders, indigenous people, rural landowners, and conservationists. 90 years later, the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation continues knitting together the park's many stakeholders into a permanent tapestry of cooperation and collaboration. In 2023, the foundation, which serves as the Parkway's nonprofit partner, launched the first listening sessions of Blue Ridge Rising, a year-long project that brought together leaders from all of the counties through which the Parkway passes. Blue Ridge Rising is the first ever endeavor since the Parkway came into existence, in which an effort has been made to unify the 29 counties to create a regional voice, says Carolyn Widner Ward, CEO of the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation. While many of America's national parks honor a specific place, like Mount Rainier or Crater Lake, the Blue Ridge Parkway stitches together a vast geological expanse stretching across some of the oldest mountains in the world. As a result, it's impossible to talk about a park hundreds of miles long without discussing the unique challenges that it presents and the connections that are required to protect its hallmark feature, the astonishing views afforded by 272 overlooks. Visitors come for the views, but we don't own the views, Ward says. The Parkway's view sheds are owned by the adjacent communities, including the 4,700 park neighbors who have land that touches the Parkway. That's why engaging those neighbors in the protection of the Parkway is so important. The southern Appalachian Mountains that are home to the Parkway represent one of the most biodiverse places in the temperate world. There are more species of trees here than all of Europe, Ward says. It's the storehouse of our history and culture. It's an economic engine for our mountain towns. Ward's role as Parkway advocate comes naturally, like it did for Swartout. The Parkway served as a scenic backdrop to her childhood in Southwest Virginia, and it represents a homecoming for Ward as well. In 2006, she had earned her doctorate in forestry and was teaching at Humboldt State University in California. During a birthday party for her 3-year-old daughter, she invited the children to sit down outside near a creek. Their parents ran to their cars to get blankets to put on the ground so their kids wouldn't have to sit on the grass, Ward says. The disconnect between those children and the natural world struck her. I realized I couldn't tell my students they could change the world if I wasn't willing to try. Within months, she moved to North Carolina and took a job with the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation to start a new program called Kids in Parks. 16 years later, it has helped 1.8 million children fall in love with the outdoors and is one of the foundation's signature programs. More than 1,200 individuals participated in Blue Ridge Rising, including elected officials, community leaders, environmentalists, engaged citizens, and landowners, resulting in 69 strategies to protect America's most popular park and improve the visitor experience, provide educational experiences, and promote the Parkway's gateway communities. Unlike so many of the country's pilgrimage parks, where a visit might be a once-in-a-lifetime experience, visitors return to the Blue Ridge Parkway again and again thanks to its vast reach along the eastern seaboard, linking dozens of mountain communities along the way. Which is one of the reasons Ward is such a big fan of Superintendent Swartout. This park is different, Ward says. This is our home. This is our backyard. Because of that, the sense of ownership people have is very different. It takes a special superintendent to understand that. It's also why Ward was thrilled to have people like Becky Anderson participating in Blue Ridge Rising. Anderson was raised on a farm in Canton and spent her career advocating for Western North Carolina through a variety of initiatives, including Handmade in America, a groundbreaking nonprofit that celebrates the art and craft of the mountains. Her passion for Appalachia is matched only by her love for the Parkway. I grew up with picnics on Sundays on the Parkway, she remembers, fried chicken and Coca-Cola in those small glass bottles. The Parkway also served as the backdrop for two other unforgettable memories. Anderson's late husband, Ed, proposed to her at Craggy Gardens. It's where her older brother, Fred, gave his then 8-year-old sister her first haircut. While riding in the back of the family's pickup truck, he convinced her to let him cut off her pigtails. Anderson took the dramatic haircut in stride. But her mom didn't. I thought she was going to kill him, she said with a laugh. Fortunately, the mischievous Fred was spared. Dissuaded from a career in barbering, Anderson's brother Fred Chappell went on to become an acclaimed writer, beloved professor, and the poet laureate of North Carolina. Those kinds of experiences are shared by North Carolinians from across the state. At a recent Earth Day celebration at Craggy Gardens picnic area, Governor Roy Cooper recalled how his family made multiple treks to the parkway from their home in Nash County. Several times when we were small, our parents would take us on a slow ride up the Blue Ridge Parkway, and my brother and I would get to choose where to stop, he said. What was amazing to me, especially as someone having grown up in eastern North Carolina, where things are pretty flat, was to see these mountain vistas. As a child, it was a special time for me. After being introduced at the event, Governor Cooper did something unusual for a politician. He seized the moment by not speaking. Reaching the podium, he invited the audience to listen with him and take in the surrounding beauty. The long, reverential silence that followed, broken only by a breeze stirring the branches of the surrounding birch and beech trees, spoke volumes about a shared love for the parkway and a commitment to its protection. For Ward, one memory in particular represents why the parkway means so much to so many. One day, she was enjoying the views from the Pounding Mill Overlook near Brevard. She saw an older gentleman who had set out two chairs and a picnic in front of him. He had a bottle of wine and two wine glasses, Ward says. I kept looking around to see if there was someone else. She eventually struck up a conversation with him and learned that the man's wife had died. I just came up here to toast our anniversary, he told Ward. This was her favorite place on the parkway. For some, of course, the parkway is a pilgrimage park. This spring, Janet Botnin and Roy Schillinger kicked off a road trip in Washington State, where they reunited with the Chevy Silverado that they had ferried the year before from their home on the Prince of Wales Island, Alaska. By the time they reached the Tan Bark Ridge Overlook near Asheville in late May, they'd been on the road for almost a month, traveling more than 6,000 miles. During their travels, they'd covered just about every inch of the North Carolina section of the parkway. Prior to the trip, Botnin and Schillinger had examined their Blue Ridge Parkway map and had drawn circles around every spot they wanted to see, creating a scenic string of pearls familiar to many. Mount Jefferson, Cascade Falls, Grandfather Mountain, Linville Falls, Mount Mitchell, Craigie Dome, Graveyard Fields, Cherokee. Schillinger's standout memory is Mount Mitchell. I wanted to go to the highest point east of the Rockies, he said. What an opportunity to be able to drive within 300 yards of the top. Looking out over the view of Lake Pinnacle and Cattail Peak, Schillinger sums up the opinion of many parkway visitors. It doesn't get better than this. As for Swartout, when it comes to her favorite places on the parkway, the superintendent has many from which to choose. She enjoys hiking up to Craggy Pinnacle on foggy days. She's inspired by the Cherokee history at Water Rock Knob and the restoration projects that have taken place there. But she's also grown particularly fond of a place just a short distance from her office, the Blue Ridge Parkway Visitor Center at Milepost 384 near Asheville. I love it because it's a gateway for people who've never visited, she says. As the caretaker for America's most visited park, Swartout has a very simple message to share. I would like for all people to know that they have a role to play in the stewardship of this place. People protect what they know about and care about. She could very well be reflecting on her own role as superintendent, which is something for which every North Carolinian can be thankful. To learn more about the Blue Ridge Parkway and its visitor center, check out NPS, that's for National Park Service, N like November, P as in Papa, S as in Sierra, .gov/BLRI. And I want to go back to a couple of photos that were here. Talking about Water Rock Knob, at 6,273 feet in elevation, the summit of Water Rock Knob is the highest point on the parkway, known for its panoramic views, spectacular sunrises and sunsets, and Mile High Visitor Center. And it's certainly, I don't know if this is a sunrise or a sunset, but it has just a spectrum of colors. You can see a little bit of the fall foliage, but mostly still green. But the color comes from the sunrise, the sun itself, and there are purples and pinks and magentas and golds and rust colors in the sky and on the mountain, reflected onto the mountains. It's beautiful. And then moving forward into this article, one little section that I wasn't able to read. Here's one. An easy hike to the summit of Craggy Pinnacle offers views of Pisgah National Forest draped in fall foliage. Craggy Dome across the way and Blue Ridge Parkway meandering through it all. And it's, you can see an overlook there looking down on the road, but there's, you know, the fall foliage and the even the bushes are colorful looking out. Probably, again, the sun is involved. I don't know if it's a sunrise or a sunset. And this is a little mini sub-article housed in the middle of this larger article called Carefree Cruising. There may be no road better suited for top-down exploration than the Blue Ridge Parkway. As a result, visitors often get glimpse a host of unusual, quote, wildlife on the two-lane blacktop. Jaguars, mustangs, spiders, stingrays, hogs, and the very rare bug-eye sprite. Larry and Barbara Griswold live a short distance from the parkway near Asheville. We can't go anywhere without driving under a parkway bridge, Barbara says. It's something that's part of our everyday life. They especially enjoy taking out their 1967 Austin Healey 3000 MK3 for scenic jaunts. It's a wonderful driving road, Larry says of the parkway, which was designed for just the sort of casual spins that the couple takes on a regular basis. It's very scenic. You just get to drive and drive. David Wood is another vintage sports car enthusiast who, being from Derbyshire, England, comes by his love for British motor cars naturally. After immigrating to the U.S. in the 90s, Wood eventually landed in Hendersonville in 2017. Today, he's the president of the British Car Club of WNC, one of the dozens of car and motorcycle enthusiast groups that consider the Blue Ridge Parkway a kind of motoring Valhalla. Wood most appreciates the quiet and the vistas all along the road. It's just very calm and relaxing, he says. In many ways, this area of North Carolina reminds him of his birthplace in the British Midlands, countryside for miles and miles. Sometimes the club draws dozens of members on parkway drives, creating a colorful parade of classic vehicles in British racing green, tartan red, and old English white. We're all looking out for each other, Wood says. It's a shared experience. Wood sees a parallel as well between the care that these members have for their rare machines and for the road that beckons them on warm and sunny days. It's really about preserving these things for as long as we can, he says. As for his favorite spot on the parkway, Wood is lost for words. After much deliberation, he finally says, I can't single anything out. It wouldn't be fair. The parkway itself is the destination. Our next article is entitled Worlds of Art. And we have a couple of photographs here of some pottery. There's blue pottery. It's a pitcher and a coffee mug and a coffee cup and a little tiny pitcher that have a dogwood motif in white and brown and yellow. And the little caption here says, Pete and Kim McWhirter run the pottery studio established by his parents in 1963. The thin lip of their drinking vessels is a distinctive element of the McWhirters' work. All right, worlds of art. Art galleries, beautiful and intriguing backdrops to the works they sell and display are tucked among hills and valleys throughout western North Carolina. McWhirter Pottery in Burnsville. Surrounded by shelves of brown pots and a floor cluttered with white clay-spattered buckets, Pete McWhirter cradles the spinning clay in his hands. Bluegrass music drifts from his radio as he molds the clay into a bowl. He works inside a structure made of rough-hewn lumber that looks like a classic mountain cabin along North Carolina Highway 80, part of the Mount Mitchell Scenic Drive in the South Tow River Valley. It's the oldest pottery in Yancey County, founded in 1963 by his parents, Corey and Jim McWhirter. His mother studied art in college, and his father, originally from Georgia, made oil paintings. In 1960, after serving as missionaries in Paraguay, the couple moved to the North Carolina mountains, penniless, Pete says, with their four children. Corey helped an accomplished potter in the area, Wanda Lee Austin, with her production work. When I was 5 years old, Pete says, I was poking my fingers in clay, watching them work and helping with the shows. Pete and his wife Kim carry on the tradition, having taken ownership of the pottery business in 1989, 3 years before Corey died. I have no formal training, he says. I'm inspired by others. The couple have another artistic side beyond their pottery. Both are songwriters and musicians. They've produced albums and performed at a host of festivals, including Merlefest in Wilkesboro, where they're also featured potters. It's near closing time, but Pete will labor a few more hours into the evening to make bowls for a group of customers. Wonderful life here in the valley, he says, taking a pause from the potter's wheel and walking around the store. This wonderful valley, sculpted by the South Tow River, rolls out beneath the shadow of Mount Mitchell, towering on the southwestern horizon. It's a valley of trails, cabins, and campgrounds, the essentials for a mountain getaway, where the ancient craft of pottery still turns mud into masterpieces. And if you're interested in learning more about McWhirter Pottery, they have a website, McWhirterPottery.com. That's McWhirter Pottery, PotterY.com. Next up is Carlton Gallery in Banner Elk. Tony Carlton is a native daughter of these mountains, reared in a family of weavers and woodworkers. Her life is steeped in mountain artistry. I loved doing anything I could do with my hands, she said. Growing up between Boone and Blowing Rock, Carlton was 9 years old when her grandmother taught her to weave. Her father and grandfather built looms for local weavers, and she, too, learned how to build a loom. Carlton double majored in art marketing and industrial arts at Appalachian State University. In 1982, she and a couple of her artist friends opened the Woven Works Art Gallery and Studios, changing its name to the Carlton Gallery 5 years later. A loom that her grandfather built now sits in the gallery, a handsome building of dark brown wood and stone columns along NC Highway 105 in the grandfather community. It nuzzles up against the woods across the road from the Watauga River, rippling its way toward Tennessee. On the southwestern horizon, Grandfather Mountain's chiseled face cuts a profile against the sky. Traffic streams by on the two-lane, where a sign framed in rocks announces fine art. The local landscape paintings are by far her best sellers. We've got the prettiest scenery, and this is what customers want hanging on their wall, employee Carolyn Witt says. Take a moment to peruse the beauty of the artwork, the riots of reds, yellows, and oranges of autumn, the bursts of whites, pinks, and greens of spring. A few artists actually step out with their backpacks and easel and go paint outside to capture this beautiful area that we live in, Carlton says. As for her own work, it's more of the abstract and spiritual variety, inviting viewers to interpret her pieces in their own way. But she knows it's the mountain vistas right outside her windows that keep people coming through her door, looking to carry a piece of the landscape home. And for more information on her gallery, you can look up carltongallery.com. Tony Carlton's namesake High Country Gallery boasts artwork in a variety of media from more than 150 local, regional, and national artists. And we have a picture of some of the artwork that she has in her studio or her gallery, along with looks like some woodworking crafts as well. The Bascom, a center for the visual arts in Highlands. Inside a barn that now houses a ceramic studio, Cedar Chan quietly passes an afternoon. She's making a gravy bowl in the shape of a possum, its tail fashioned as the ladle. She's one of the local artists who practice their passion at the Bascom, a 6-acre visual arts campus on a former horse farm just off Franklin Road near downtown Highlands. "This is what I do for fun and therapy," Chan says. The Bascom opened in the mid-1980s as the Bascom Louise Gallery, a one-room exhibition hall in Highlands Hudson Library. Watson Barrett was an artist who had long been an ardent supporter of the library. When Barrett died in 1962, he willed the funding to establish an art gallery. Over time, the gallery collected abstract paintings, photographs, and other fine art. By the mid-2000s, the community saw the need for a bigger, more dynamic gallery and moved it to the horse farm. There, wood from the farm was repurposed to build the studio barn. Its faded walls give the space a rustic air, a natural complement to the 87-foot-long covered bridge at the center's entrance. A nature trail, featuring sculptures along the way, follows a brook that burrows through thickets of rhododendron and mountain laurel. The center's three galleries are free to the public and host rotating exhibitions. "There's always been a strong community of creatives here," says Billy Love, the Bascom's deputy executive director. "Over time, a strong desire to leave a home for these folks developed." Louise Bascom Barrett and her husband, Watson, were art appreciators. Now, generations of art enthusiasts come to admire the creations for themselves and to feel inspired by a landscape that is itself a work of art. And for more information on the Bascom, you can check out their website, which is thebascom.org. And the word the, T-H-E, Bascom is spelled B like Bravo, A-S like Sierra, C like Charlie, O, M like Mike. The centerpiece of the Bascom's six-building campus is the three-story, 27,500-square-foot exhibition space, which is a rustic-looking building itself with a tin roof and rustic-looking wood and stone surround. Then we have Highlander Gallery in Brasstown. The stone walls are a thing of rugged beauty. There are rocks hauled from Brasstown Creek to build the historic Mountain Valley Creamery in 1928. Perched on 3 acres between the creek and Old Highway 64, the old creamery now houses Highland Gallery. If you need more information, you can look at highlandergallery.com. That sound tells us we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired and is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, call us at 919-832-5138. And so long until next time.